One quick reminder, guys, we're going to keep doing this for a while. Do the quick reminders. If you donate to either LGBTQ plus organizations or women's organizations, we're giving away our live shows about Top Gun and Dirty Dancing. To find out more about that at dissectingthe80s.com/donate. I also want to plug, Andrew and I are going head-to-head in a battle for trivia supremacy on the Trivia Geeks podcast. That is coming up. It is going to be Wednesday, December 21st at 9 p.m. It airs live while they record it. So if you want to tune in and hear us do that, I'll plug that again, Facebook and whatnot, too. But yeah, we're going to be doing a little live trivia competition against each other, which should be pretty fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So thanks to them for having us on. We're looking forward to being part of it. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and welcome to Dissecting the 80s. I am Trip Leno, one half of the Mega Podcasting Powers. And with me, as always, is my tag team partner, a man who gives a pretty darn good Christmas gift and didn't even have to go to small town America to learn about the meaning of Christmas to get that ability. The Macho Mandrew.
Andrew Leno.
We're doing this particular Christmas movie called The Christmas Gift, starring John Denver, because I actually visited the town where they filmed this when I was in Denver this past summer. And
did you happen upon the town?
No. So what happened was I met a woman named Sophie, and eventually got to talking about the podcast. And she was saying, like, oh, did you know there's this, like, I grew up in this little town right outside Denver. It's like half hour outside Denver, maybe 40 minutes. That's like been used in a bunch of movies. And she's like, it was in this movie Phantoms, which I've never actually seen, but I only know because Kevin Smith made it a recurring joke, like, Ben Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms, yo. But I think it's a ghost movie, and it was apparently used for a couple other movies as well. At this moment I'm not remembering them, but the town has like a strange, like, also Mark Hamill's grandfather lived there, and like the
that's
crib-
weird.
Yeah, like the crib that Mark Hamill was babied in. I don't know what the proper verb is, but Mark Hamill's crib is in this town because of that. So she was talking about it, and I was going out that way anyway. So, you know, I went out there and visited a place, and it's like exactly the same as it is in the movie still.
Really?
Yeah, I hadn't That's watched weird. The movie. Yeah, it's really awesome. It's a very – the main street there – has maybe two blocks, maybe three blocks of businesses, but all the storefronts date to like the 1800s, maybe even earlier than that. I could be getting
that's really cool, actually.
Wrong. Yeah, so you could like very easily, like the post office in the movie,
mm-hmm.
it still has a hitching post in front of it.
Stop, really?
Yeah, and she said that people still use it. So of course, this movie, she was saying like this movie is like a big deal there, Christmas time, and like. I'm sorry we're doing such a long intro here, but I never really experienced what the term folk hero meant in real life. Like, I have obviously heard that term and seen movies and stuff about folk heroes, but the people...
Tall tale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Great example. But John Denver is, like, a folk hero to the state of Colorado. Like, he's everywhere out there.
Wait, is Denver just a stage name?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But there's I'll post a picture of it. I always say I'm going to do this and I don't, but I'll post a picture of it. There's this incredible statue of him outside of Red Rocks. It's an amazing concert venue. That's why I went out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like got his arm up and an eagle is landing on his arm with its wings outstretched. It's like the best statue I've ever seen of a person.
That's insane.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. John Denver, obviously hero to Coloradans. Coloradans? I'm not sure what the word is.
Coloradians?
Yes, that's it. Potheads, right? That's what they want to be called now. I'm so sorry, Colorado. You're a lovely state. So anyway, the town kind of, she was saying the town like really celebrates this movie, and they have, you know, they it's like a big deal because it's this, I mean, to be fair, you know, we're making kind of like, haha, isn't that hilarious jokes. We grew up in Downingtown where they filmed The Blob, and there's
and
a festival.
There's still Blob Fest every year.
Yeah.
Although I think the difference between that is that like The Blob still gets talked about.
Sure, sure, sure.
But
it's a better movie.
It is a much better movie.
Yeah.
So, also, apparently the company that produced The Blob was like super Christian.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they produced a bunch of movies. None of them did very well except for The Blob, because mostly they were like religious movies.
That's the first I've heard that. So anyway, we watched The Christmas Gift, and you know what that means.
We gotta go back. We gotta go dissect the 80s. It's your dollhouse. Something's gotta be done about your dollhouse.
When the mega powers explode... I'm talking about the 80s.
Great Scott!
Cream of the crop. Oh, yeah.
Mega power, yeah!
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
I think the most interesting part of this movie, to me as a not Christmas movie enjoyer person, is that the narrative of big city, busy business person doesn't know the meaning of Christmas and finds it in small town America is a 30-year-old story. They're still making six of a year on the Lifetime Movie Network.
Hallmark Channel.
Well, both.
Really? Lifetime does it too?
I'm pretty sure they do. Yeah, maybe I'm getting wrong. Hallmark definitely does. I don't know. But anyway, those movies... That narrative has not changed since 1986.
Well, I also thought it was funny that they didn't establish that narrative instantly. Because, like, they open on the town, and a man is driving a car, and you don't know if he's a...
I'm sorry, they open on an actual Christmas card that becomes live action.
Okay. And then there's an old man driving a car, and you don't... And he's, like, telling everyone to make sure they've written their letters to Santa, so you don't know, like, what his job is in this town, or what he contributes.
Yeah, I was in the first minutes of this thinking like, oh man, is this like a Santa, sorry kids, is this a Santa is real movie? And like, that's the narrative here, but it's not. It's just a town that like really believes.
It's weird. That's my note a lot, that these people are weird.
Yes, that's an accurate depiction of these characters.
So you like see this dude, don't know, is he a deliver man? Is he a postman? Is he just a letter writer? I don't know. Then we go to the big city.
I saw that car, by the way. Like, it's parked. Yeah, oh, I have a picture of it. Yeah, the car is still there in town. Yeah, yeah.
See, the way they shot it, because it doesn't say, there's no place card of, like, Georgetown, Colorado. It just showed, like, small small town feel, and then New York City. So I was like, oh, I guess it's just, like, upstate New York.
Yeah, it's a town that's so small that having a cab company, even a one cab company, seems extravagant.
It does. But the boss that we meet isn't instantly evil, and I was so thrown by that. Because he was like, you know, we just want to, like, go in, throw a couple things around the outskirts of the town. It revitalizes the business of these towns. They, in turn, you know, come to us, and we work together to create these communities. John Denver, you've worked with us before. Who cares that you're late to this meeting buying a Christmas present for your daughter? I don't care. I'm glad you're here. We're all going to talk about our ideas for this new thing we're building. And I was like, this is weird. This is very weird.
And it makes it even weirder, too, that, like, the eventual payoff is he's a dick. Like, it's a very hard turn.
Comes out of nowhere.
Then. Yeah, yeah. Also, this is not related to anything, but I recorded this off the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries channel, which is, like, a subset Hallmark movie channel.
Oh, God.
One, I saw some very interesting advertisements for movies that I would rather cut off a toe than watch. And two,
how many of them were like the worst witch or the best witch, the good witch?
I don't. What's the good witch?
I don't know. It's a series of movies they make. I've only seen the trailer.
Oh, no. There was definitely one that was like a series of movies, but it's like they're all the same. Like it's a she was too busy for Christmas, and this woman's like, you know, being a.
Got a bun.
Successful business person. Yes.
She got her hair in a bun and a power suit on.
Yeah. And then it's like, he was a schlubby delivery man. And he, like, drops a bunch of packages. And then it's like, together they'll learn that the meaning of Christmas is love. And then they play Delamitri. Mm-hmm. they really don't. But
they can't even afford Delamitri.
No, they can't. Yeah. It's a sound alike of Roll to Me. But yeah, there's a lot of really bad ones. One of them had Willie Nelson in it, which made me kind of sad.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, but what else is he doing?
I don't know. Just like sing some songs every once in a while. Feels like a better use of your time.
I don't know. I also saw there was a weird Dolly Parton life story. Like, yeah, there's multi-part life story.
Every year we get like another decade of Dolly's life made into a movie. I think we're up to like the 20s now. Like her
20s.
Like,
I love Dolly Parton. She's a lovely human. Like, did you see what she's doing for the victims of the
fires?
Yeah,
she's a rad lady. We've talked at length before about how Dolly Parton is a national treasure. We still stand behind that.
For those of you who haven't heard, she's giving like $1,000 a month or a week or something to
a
month to each family that has been affected by the wildfires in Tennessee. And just like, that's what you should be doing if you have a lot of money. Like, that's just doing good.
Yeah.
And doing good.
Yeah. See our 9-to-5 episode for a lot more about how wonderful Dolly Parton is.
Oh, yeah.
But the other thing is, because this is an older movie, it's presented in the 4x3 old TV format, because it's made for TV in the 80s.
It's made for TV about the size of a microwave?
Yes. Well, in the corner, for the duration of the movie, was a 4-inch tall white HD marker.
Oh, I love when they do that. And it's just got black bars around the edges?
It was vertical black bars, and then the bottom right corner, and I'm not exaggerating, it was 6 inches tall. It was taller than my phone. It said HD for the whole...
And it was crystal clear.
2 hours. Like, much more clear than the rest of the movie, yes.
They do that with the Golden Girls a lot, because they obviously don't have HD Golden Girls.
Right.
But they'll play it, and they'll be like, you're watching the HD channel.
So we get to in that boardroom that Andrew mentioned there, it's like a jumble of buzzwords where it's like profits, tax shelter investment, ski resort.
It's basically that character from Futurama, the 80s businessman.
Yes, his only regret is that he has boneitis and that he agreed to be in this movie.
Yes.
My other favorite thing is, clearly, this boardroom is located in Colorado, like the set, because that has those like fake stone walls that are at every ski lodge or fake ski lodge.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And it's like, this is New York City. And you're like, no, it isn't.
That is not New York City.
This is very clearly a rustic boardroom design. That is not where these people conduct their business.
So he tells John Denver, you're going to have to go visit this town. Take your daughter. It'll be a Christmas vacation. Which, again, I'm like, that seems like a reasonable request.
Yeah, it is a little lame to be sending them, like, right around Christmas time, but according to the, like, information we learn later, it's not even over Christmas. It, like, they're going to be back in time for Christmas.
But, like, there are worse places to be over Christmas than Colorado. Like, he could have been like, you're going to be where there's all sunny. I know you're used to, you want a white Christmas, but you're going to go to all sun.
And he lets him take his daughter, too, which is, like, a good guy move.
It's so confusing.
It is. And then we get the slow piano music starts as John Denver like walks into his daughter's bedroom and she's clearly a little upset. And I'm like, oh shit, mom's dead. Like instantaneously you can read it coming. There's this like very soft piano twinkling and it's like, oh, this is going to be the part where, and then 90 seconds later, he's like, I know it's been hard since your mom died, but
a year ago on Christmas. But I love that she's like, I don't want to go to Colorado. All my friends are here. And I'm like, they're not moving, right? Like, I didn't miss a part where they're moving to Colorado.
Yes, it is really weird dialogue. And then she says, this Christmas, I'll have you all to myself. So we know where Folgers gets their ad campaigns now.
Oh, gross.
Is it Folgers or is it Maxwell House?
It's Folgers.
Okay. There's a very creepy Christmas Folgers ad, in case you guys haven't seen it.
I think everybody has seen that and has that theory, because it's on Facebook of, like, the extended version jokes.
Well, it's pretty damn creepy. So they go to the airport, and they land in Colorado, and it's all snowy. And then she comes
out of the plane looking like Veruca Salt.
she's puffy in her big jacket.
No, she's got the little girl's like fur at the bottom, like,
oh, you're right.
I'm richer
right.
than you are. My father can buy your father look.
Yes. Well, probably could.
Probably.
Both in fiction and out.
Yes. And then we realize that the man from the beginning is in fact the owner and proprietor of the cab company, and his car is a piece of garbage.
And it's like galumphing its way up to the gate to the sounds of banjo music, which is like a little on the nose movie, like a little bit.
I mean, the car is essentially a sneeze away from just put your feet through the floor and Fred Flintstone it forward.
I mean, later on, people do actually push it.
They do. And again, and these people just get to town and he's like, so did you write your letters to Santa? And I was like, what is happening in this town?
Yeah, they're like way in on the Christmas thing, like before they need to be in on these people who they just met and don't really know why they're there.
Exactly. Like, I kind of want to take the basic idea of this movie and then rework it to be a horror movie where it, like, if you don't write your letter to Santa, he comes and kills you.
They made that last year. It's called Krampus.
I know, but like, it's not like it's you didn't write a letter to Santa.
It is.
No, it's he came because he wrote a letter, I thought.
No, the kid rips up his letter and doesn't send it.
Oh, I thought he wrote a letter and Krampus just got it.
No. He writes this letter of like
TBQH. I need to see it. It's been on my list.
Not really spoiling anything for you, but like he writes this like letter and then he like gets angry and rips it up, and that's what causes Krampus to go.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So they're driving up to town, and the little girl's like, "Daddy, it's just like your childhood town." And he's supposed to be an architect, and like, not all architects are good at drawing, but most of them, I think, are, even if they're not doing architectural drawings, which is obviously not like artistic renderings. And yeah. She holds up this drawing that he drew for her the night before of the town he grew up in, and it is pretty much Georgetown, but it also looks like it was drawn by an 8-year-old.
Well, see, that's also something that I'm a costume designer, as I've mentioned before, and being a good, like, drawing really well doesn't make you a good designer. It just means you know how to use the language of design. So I would imagine it's the same with being an architect. Like, drawing really well doesn't make you a good architect. It just means you know how to speak the language of architecture.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. But he just seems like he has very little ability to draw, given that his profession day-to-day is drawing.
Yeah, but then we see him later drawing, and he's great at it.
I know, that's why it makes this very confusing that he drew this, like, 8-year-old's drawing for his daughter.
Yeah.
And
it looks like Main Street USA, straight up.
Still does. And the car, like, boom, blows up as they're walking into the post office. And the little girl, like, looks at it and gives the, like, typical eye roll and smirk as she opens the door. And I was like, you just met that man. You saw that car for the first time when you got in it.
To be fair, though, she did get in the car, which means she knows exactly how that car runs.
I know, but like, she reacts as if like, oh, it's old Bud and his cab company, what a jokester. It's such a there's a handful of stuff in this movie that just makes no sense, like from a directing standpoint, where that's the best take is that one, like that's the one we went with.
We also didn't mention the part where there's a kid on a horse and no one talks about it.
Oh, we didn't get to the horse kid yet.
Oh, I thought the horse kid was right before that. That's what I
with the postal, the postmaster.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
yes.
There for like, it's like 5 minutes. It's a weird cut. They should have just put it right before, but they didn't.
Yeah. I think that's supposed to establish that, like, the poor kids have no money and the postmaster is a nice lady.
Yeah, Malcolm in the Middle mom is the postmaster.
Jane Kasmerick, I believe is her name.
Yes. But she's talking to a kid and he just, like, jumps on his horse and turns and, like, angstily trots away.
With no saddle, too, which is even more impressive.
Although, that makes sense to me. Like, if you grew up with horses and that's your personal horse, I would imagine.
Oh, it just looked cool in the movie. You don't see very many saddle-free horse rides.
No.
So they go in the post office, and it's letter day, which means everyone in the town, like, writes their letters to Santa. And John Denver is like, here, send this roll of film off. So apparently he fired off a lot of pictures.
That's what I was like, how many photos did you take of this one shot of Main Street?
he just took the same photo 24 times and is like, one of those will come out.
And she's like, no, it's only open for letters to Santa because it's a Sunday, dumbass.
And he gets like kind of shitty about it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, he's going to be the big bad because his boss wasn't. Where he's like, you're a postal office, and you're open. You need to mail my letter.
And it's like, where do you think it's going? Like, who do you think is getting it? Like, coming to pick it up?
Yeah, it's a weird, like, back and forth they have that doesn't really accomplish anything except to make John Denver look like a jerk. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I guess if that's what they were trying to do, mission accomplished. But other than that, not super great.
Yeah.
And then they go to the hotel, and of course, the postmaster's like, now don't forget to write your letter, little girl. And they get to
the hotel. And the hotelier says, did you write your letter to Santa Claus? I would leave this town instantly.
I would be really afraid. Like, you're absolutely right. If you put a little bit of ominous music underneath it and it would just kept being like, did you write your letter? Did you write your letter? Like a supercut of all the did you write your letters.
Yeah.
Would be really creepy in this movie. You'd have to put like the Requiem for a Dream music where it's like,
oh, that'd be a good one. Or a haunting cover of a pop song.
No, I'm done with the haunting covers of pop songs. It'd be
a haunting cover of All I Want for Christmas Is You.
I'm so sick of the friggin' sad,
I'm so sick of it.
I'm so over it. It's every I'm not kidding. I went to see Arrival and three of the trailers had slow covers of things, including that one that's called The Cure for Wellness has a slow cover of I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones. Where it's like a woman in a single piano note being like, 24 hours to go, I wanna be sedated. No, throw it in the garbage.
I like them. We differ on that point.
They also immediately cast this little girl in the pageant, which seems even more aggressive than the letters.
Yeah. And his boss calls him that day and is like, I need a status report. And I was like, was this a day trip? Was this a day trip from New York to Colorado and back again?
The status report is, I just got here, like, an hour ago.
And somehow managed to fire off a roll of film.
It's actually just, like, 20 pictures of him and his daughter, like, proto selfies, and then yes, four of Main Street. And then
the boss is like, well, I want a status report tomorrow. And then there's ominous music, and you realize the boss is a bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he goes down to dinner, and Jane Kaczmarek is there, and his daughter is there. And then almost immediately, no, wait, the timing of that was wrong. Just before he takes the phone call, he hands his daughter off to Jane Kaczmarek, who we only saw him meet at the post office and then have like a 2-sentence conversation with. And he's like, here, you go with this lady.
Sure.
you what now? Like you know this woman because you had a fight with her. Like why? What? What is happening right now?
I guess it's a small town thing.
Everybody is a good in a small town. There's never any murderers.
Yes, obviously. But it reminds me of like we went to the beach in a very small, quaint little seaside town. Like it was essentially like the seaside version of this place, and we didn't know anyone because we were vacationing there. But I was walking home from the library because I went to do something, and an old man just was like, where's your jacket? You're going to catch a cold. And I was like, what? And I instantly went into defense mode because I'm an asshole. And I was like, oh, wait, no, he's just like being a kindly old man.
That was just a courteous thing to say. I just didn't expect it.
Yeah, I was so thrown.
I also love that part of their conversation is like, what can you tell me about the town? Well, they all believe in Santa. Well, they're a bunch of idiots. Get back to work.
Yeah. Well, he was like, I tried to mail off the film, but it's only open for letters to Santa because it's a Sunday. I'm like, yeah, because there's no post on Sunday.
Yeah, and I don't think this town's big enough to have a FedEx or UPS branch in 1986.
No.
Oh, also, we're doing this movie on like almost its exact anniversary. Our episode comes out, by the way.
That's a fun fact.
Yeah. So they go to the tree lighting where they hear the legend of Santa, although I guess they don't call it Santa. They're more like this magical thing that happened in our town where everybody needed a gift and this guy just like showed up and gave it to him. It's a very kind of like, it's not like you have to get the rights to Santa or anything, so I didn't quite understand how that works.
You have to pay Coca-Cola the rights to Santa.
Yeah, you probably will soon. So they have like...
And they sing like an entire version of O Christmas Tree.
Yeah, there's more than one verse.
Like, you know what you need of O Christmas Tree? O Christmas Tree, O Christmas Tree, how lovely are thy branches. That's
fade
it.
Fade out. Fade out.
That's all
fade,
you need.
Fade out. New scene, yeah.
It's all like, you need.
I don't think we've told this on the podcast before. We were on vacation when Andrew was like...
Oh, Jamaica?
5 or 6, yeah. Our mom won a contest, and we got to go to a cooking contest, we got to go to Jamaica. And Andrew wanted to go to Hibachi for his birthday, because his birthday meal... Do you want to tell this story? It's your story.
Yeah, there was a hibachi place, so I wanted to go there because they threw shrimp at your mouth, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever when I was 5. And then we told them it was my birthday, so they brought out the cake, and they were singing, and they sang Happy Birthday, and I was like, okay, cool. And, like, took a breath to blow out the candles, and that as I took my breath, they took their breath to continue singing the song.
Because there's two more verses to Happy Birthday, the one that everyone knows, and then there's... How old are you now? And then may the good Lord bless you. And these people sang all three verses, and Andrew got fooled both times at the end where he was like, right about the candles, and nope, JK, more song is coming.
It's just like wide-eyed mystified, like what?
What I wouldn't give to have been able to record that with a phone. So they hear the legend and everything, and then it starts doing like the courtship between Jane Kaczmarek and John Denver, and which starts with her being like, I have a sleigh. Would you guys like to go for a ride? And like, then they just have a proper sleigh ride together.
It looks like they went to a local community theater and were like, hey, do you have a sleigh? Have you done a production of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? And have a working sleigh? Cool.
That's exactly what it looks like. It's really cheap looking.
And while they're like building a snowman, the little girl's like, my daddy likes to go into small towns and build things there that make business boom. But that's not what he's doing here, I promise.
Oh, also, my mom's dead. She died a year ago exactly on Christmas.
I was like, is there any other exposition you just want to vomit at the camera?
And I love that, like, Jane Kasmerick is, like, doing her best, given that she's, like, one of two actual actors in this movie, her and Kurtwood Smith, the dad from That 70s Show. Mm-hmm. And, like, she's there with John Denver, who, like, as the Southerners might say, bless his heart, is trying. But it's not.
You know, but I have to say, I have this note later. I'll say it now. He is a passable actor.
Yeah, he's fine. He's not. He is. I thought it was going to be way worse, and I was looking forward to it. So I was pleasantly surprised by how much better John Denver was as an actor than I thought he would be.
Yeah, like, how the hell did John Denver the way he did? Because it feels like he just did anything he wanted to, and America was just like, okay.
He is pretty charming. He's mostly like a charisma charm type actor in this movie. Charming. I haven't seen a lot of the John Denver film catalog, but going from this example, he did kind of just like a, you know, shuffle and charm your way through the thing.
Yeah, but like he acted, he wrote and sang songs. He was an activist. He flew planes. Like, it just felt like he did everything.
Yeah, maybe he should have not done that last one so much.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Yes. But it happened.
If you're a rock star, don't be a pilot. Also, I feel like this is pretty basic. So the plot thickens when we find out that there is a property that's been foreclosed upon that's like a pretty big parcel of farmland that could be easily
snapped. Like they were saying the mayor was being foreclosed on. Was that who that was?
No, no.
Because like
the,
how?
No, no, not the mayor. I think their name does sound like mayor, but it's not.
Oh, because at first, I mean, it later was revealed it wasn't, but it sounded like they're like, oh, the mayor's house is being foreclosed on. And I was like, what the fuck town is this?
You have the IMDb up. See what Kurtwood Smith's character's name is.
Jake Richards.
The Richards?
Yeah. I'm so confused. Whatever.
He gets introduced in this movie in the opening bit, and he's like stumbling out of a, or not stumbling because I was. He doesn't sub out of bar. He comes, like, bustling out of a bank with the bank manager after him, like, hey, you got stuff to do. And then he disappears for, like, 35 minutes and then pops up back again where it's like, hey, your house has been foreclosed on. You're losing your farm.
And yeah.
It's not, like, the best intro to a character you've ever gotten.
No.
And then we also learn, I love this little thing, she's like talking to John. There's a lot of scenes in this movie where it's just Jane Kasmerick and John Denver talk for like 10 minutes at a different location. It's like
it's a lot of walk and talk.
Yeah, but
it's
there's
like almost
also
Sorkin.
It's the Aaron Sorkin Christmas movie. So they have like a long powwow making a snowman, and there's another one where they're like either drinking tea or cocoa or something in this woman's like den, and they're having like a long conversation about like life and the world and everything. And that's where she reveals, like, oh, I worked in the big city in Denver, and I didn't like it. I came home when my dad was sick, and then I couldn't sell his house, and he died. And then he was the postmaster, so they just made me the postmaster.
Which, like, you got to have some qualifications for that role.
Yeah, I feel like that's not necessarily a job that you could just bequeath to the heirs, like, as royal, like, it's a throne status position. Like, kind of feels like there's got to be a little bit of background in mail and mail operations before you just
something.
Become. Yeah, one would think there's a qualification.
At least be like a post person for a brief period.
Yeah, you would think. At least having to pass the civil service examination.
Yeah. But yeah, this town was way too quick to like just accept these complete outsiders who were visiting.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. Is like,
it's not like they moved.
How bad is it that this man comes to town and immediately everyone's like, well, you're the greatest thing we've ever seen.
Your daughter should be at our Christmas pageant. What? And then his boss calls to give him another update. And John Denver's like, no, you can't use this town. There's a bunch of other ones nearby. And the boss is like, no, it's this town.
He's like, just leave it alone. And he's like, no, I want Georgetown. It's gotta be Georgetown. I have to have it.
But then also, like John Denver, you could have been like, well, here, let me tell you about this other town and why it's also good and better.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you could have used some facts.
Here's the thing that also bothers me. John Denver's character's name is George. You don't need a main character in your movie named George when your movie is set in Georgetown.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even catch that.
That is a lot of Georges in one place. So they go to a dance party, which is like more of like a honky tonk at one of the bars.
It's like a town hall dance party kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's a very like all ages affair. Hollow. Yeah,
it reminds me of Sleepy Hollow, where they like let's all dance together in this barn.
Yeah, yeah, and it's exactly that, except that it's a bar. But yes, it's like a very wholesome, you know, hoedown type situation. And there's like the sad kids in the corner, which is Don Denver's daughter, and the poor kids.
But the poor kids show up late to hang out for 0.02 seconds and then leave.
Also, their faces are constantly dirty, which is like the most lame choice you could make as a wardrobe makeup person to indicate that this child is poor.
It doesn't even look good dirty. It looks like community theater dirty.
Yes. He looks like when you were a kid and you did like a burnt cork beard.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Or he's playing a chimney sweep in Mary Poppins.
Yes. Like a very cheap Mary Poppins. So John Denver like abandons his kid a lot in this movie, which I notice is a recurring theme. Like,
yeah,
pretty regularly just leaves the kid and assumes it's going to be fine, which is awful given that he's the only thing keeping this child alive.
I mean, this town does seem to give a shit about, like, a lot of shit about this kid, so.
No, they absolutely do. But he, like, leaves and walks this woman home, and he just leaves his daughter at this party by herself.
Yeah, because love happens instantly in every movie, and it's so annoying.
They, like, they're walking home, and they have that little tete-a-tete where he's like, you know where I come from, walking a woman home meant something. And they, like giggle about it, and she's like, well, here, it means something, too. And he's like, well, does it mean something tonight? And it's like, oh, just fucking kiss already. Get to it.
Ugh.
Stop drawing it out.
Vomit.
So we fast forward to John Denver's home now. So I guess it
Singing
was either,
a song.
It was
Singing
very,
a
it was
song.
Either, it was either very quick or nothing else happened when he walked that woman home.
I would and go the, with the latter.
And the little girl asks him point blank if he feels like he could ever be in love again. And he's like, well, I don't know. Like, really, dude?
But I can sing about it.
You just met that woman 2 days ago. In love? That's aggressive.
I mean, yeah. That's all. He just fucking, he sings a song, apropos of nothing.
So
it's like the weirdest mix of, it's, I guess technically it's all diegetic singing, but it's weird because John Denver just sings to his daughter. Like, singing in church and singing at the Christmas tree makes sense. She's like, do you think you could be in love again? He's like, let me sing a song about love. What? Well, no, that is not what I asked.
No. If it was at least introduced like a, Daddy, will you sing my favorite song? Then it would be fine.
Yes.
But it's not that at all. And also, while we're on the subject, I am always so uncomfortable at scenes in movies where a character is being directly sung to, like as a kind of a, in a kind of an aggressive way is how I would describe this. Not like he's being like punchy about it, but he's sitting on her bed and she can't go out and get away, and he just sings the whole song to her. Like, there are so few times in my life I want to be non-ironically sung to.
Because I'm in musicals, it's a different feeling for me. I'm like, but, used to that.
But like, do people do it with sincerity?
Yeah, there's songs like that.
No, I'm saying, like, do you have friends who would sing you like an emotional song to try to convey an emotion to you?
Oh, like IRL?
Yes.
I might have one or two.
In real life, for those who aren't 19 years old, apparently.
I might have one or two, but generally no.
Because, like, the only time this has happened in my whole life was I was in Savannah,
was
Georgia.
Was it our grandmother?
No. I was in Savannah, Georgia, with a girl I used to date, and this guy, like, saw us walking together and was like, oh, you guys are so cute. And we're like, thanks. And, like, clearly this is a guy who just wanted some money, and none of us had cash. Neither of us had cash. So it was like, hey. And he, like, started it, and he's like, you know, I sing. And I was like, hey, I don't want to be rude. I don't have any money. So I just, I'm not trying to be rude, but, like, I don't have any money. So if you would rather sing to someone who has money, that's okay. And he's like, no, you guys are so sweet. I want to sing you a song. And we look at each other and we're like, well, shit, we used the get out of jail free card and it didn't get us out of this. And so the man proceeded to sing us a song for 3 minutes, like some classic love song. I don't remember which one it was, like right in our faces, like 2 feet away. And then he finished and wanted money. And I was like, I told you I didn't have money. Like, I didn't want you to sing to me because I had to stand here doofusly for 2 minutes. Like, this was bad all around.
I mean, in that instance, I guess that is more common to me, like singing a song to someone, like as a sweet thing. That's a thing in my life.
Yeah.
Not that I have I have done it once or twice, but it's not like my move.
And the other thing about this that I found amusing is, like, sitting on the foot of someone's bed while they're tucked in is an aggressive maneuver that nobody considers to be aggressive.
How?
Because you can't get away. And the reason I know this is because when I was 16 or 17 years old, I had the sex ed talk twice in one day, one from each parent. First from my dad in a pickup truck, and then that night when
dad
I came home...
Dad got me in the pickup truck, too.
Which is awful, because you feel so much more confined in a pickup truck than in a car, even though
if
you're
I
not
tuck
in
and
the
roll,
back seat.
Yeah. How much will it hurt?
But then our mom came, and I was in bed reading a book, and she sat on the edge of the bed, effectively trapping me in the bed, and gave me the sex talk, and I kept being like, Dad already did this today. Dad, like, literally 4 hours ago, I got this from Dad. Stop. Stop doing this now. Oh, my God. And she wouldn't. And then that's why when it came time for you to get that, and Mom was like, I think you should talk to Andrew. And I was like, bullshit. I think you should talk to Andrew, because that was a bad experience for me, and he deserves the same.
Do you know what mine was?
No.
We were walking into Babies R Us to get a gift for someone, and Mom said... And Mom's exact words were, babies are expensive. Be aware. That was all she said. That was it.
Then fuck you, because I got like a whole 20-minute saga.
And Dad in the car said, I don't know what you're doing, but I assume you're doing something, and whatever it is, be smart about it.
That's about right for that one. Mom went on and on.
No, I got babies are expensive. Remember that. Walking into a Babies R Us.
You bastard. Anyway, back to John Denver's Christmas gift. The mayor, I think, is this guy who starts driving him around, because doesn't he take him out to meet Kurtwood Smith at this point?
Yes.
To show him the property?
Well, because his boss bought the property, I think, at this point.
Okay. So he goes out to, like, inspect Kurtwood Smith's, you know, property and give a report, and I think he's trying to convince Kurtwood Smith, like, not to sell at this point. But the part about this that I most enjoyed is it's such a waste in this movie that it's in this unbelievably beautiful place, and like Georgetown is incredibly beautiful, but they only show you like the town part, and it's a town in a valley between two of the mountains or two of the peaks anyway. So like you look in all directions and it's unbelievably gorgeous scenery. So this is like the only time in this whole movie, unfortunately, that you get to see beautiful Colorado, like all stretched out mountains and whatnot.
That's pretty cool.
And they're all snow capped in this, which is cool. I didn't get to see them that way because it was summertime when I was there, but yeah, there's just beautiful scenery, and it's not, like, I mean, credit to the director of photography who obviously framed the shot and everything, but, like, it's so pretty out there that you could be a fool and still line up a nice shot, because it's just unbelievably beautiful, but it's nice to see some of that make it into this movie. So there's this, like, simultaneous action happening where John Denver is meeting Kurtwood Smith and trying to be like, don't sell your farm, and his son, the older dirty kid, is showing John Denver's daughter his little secret hideout.
Which looks like an ice fishing lodge tucked away in, like, the back of their property.
Oh, yeah. Good call. That is what it looks like.
Like, about the size of an outhouse. Like, two outhouses stuck together is about the size.
Yeah. And surprisingly devoid of pornography, which you would think a 17, 16... How old is this kid?
Too old to be hanging out with this girl.
Yeah, because they are very different in age, and you would think that, like, this would be his place to smoke cigarettes and drink stolen beers.
Yeah, it's. I want to say it reminds me of where the little girl in that crazy reindeer movie we watched last Christmas hit the reindeer.
Prancer, yeah, Prancer, yes.
Where
she
like pulled a sickle on those kids.
It was like a crazy barn. She was like, "Yes, you're so right. It's very similar to that."
It's weird.
Yeah, that's really funny.
And John Denver's asshole boss comes to town with his gaggle of New York City highfalutin fancy types.
With, like, the Imperial March playing as they walk into the room. Like, the music is so Mickey Mousey.
They all have long coats with fur on the bottom and cuffs and giant,
like,
sunglasses.
Just a little bit of wind, so the coats are flapping, and their hair is all slicked back, like the full douche slicked back haircut.
Even the women's hair is just, like, jailed back.
Yeah. They look like a bunch of Trump children, like, marching into this place, and it's just like, and, like, it's a fairly apt metaphor now that I put the words together to make that joke. Yeah, they're terrible. And it's weird because they have this, like, town hall meeting where George, John Denver, is like, this guy is evil and he's going to ruin your town. And he's standing up there like, no, we're not. And the townspeople are like, he said they're not.
No, the townspeople don't want this because they're like, not we have all this stuff here.
Not at first.
Oh, because I just remember them being like, hang on. We've been here this whole time. Why would you do this?
He starts to give like the impassioned speech about like, no, I didn't want this to happen to this town. Like I did come here for that. It's basically She's All That, where he's like, no, look, I came here for the wrong reasons, yeah. But now I want to be here for the right reasons. Like you're cool and beautiful. I thought you were lame and terrible, but I was wrong.
And then the town takes the chopsticks out of the bell tower and shakes the bell down.
They're like, she was beautiful the whole time.
We mentioned that at least once per episode. She's All That. Well, and I feel like we mention it more than most people talk about the movie She's All That.
Well, we watch a lot of movies with stupid plots. So that's part of it.
I've definitely been called out before as someone like we hung out a couple times a week and they were like, it was like I said something like I went like, so kiss me as I like twirled around and they were like, that's like the fifth time you talked about She's All That. And I was like, no.
We're also going on at least four episodes in a row where I've used Delamitri as the only song apparently my brain is able to fill in the blanks for romantic encounters. I don't even like that song.
It's a bad song, but it like, works.
It's a bad song, and it's not even that prevalent in romantic comedies, but somehow it's the first one my brain thinks of.
Well, no, because I agree with that. In like my head of the caricature of 90s romantic comedies, it's always that song.
Yeah, because it's like a very 90s sounding song, which helps. So George gets thrown under the bus by the tycoon guy who's like, yeah, he came here and told me how wonderful you are. Now we're going to strip mine this place and sell it to fat tourists.
All of a sudden, because he was like, I want to build around the town and do that to bring the business in. And now he's like, no, I want to raise the whole town, burn and salt the earth.
I'm going to put all of you in a communal grave and set it on fire.
You can work in my silver mines.
It reminds me of, and boy howdy, is this a reference for only you, in the Clerks cartoon where the Alec Baldwin character Leonardo presents his plan to take over and ruin Leonardo, and the people in the crowd like keep hearing it being like, oh yeah, here's all these horrible things that are gonna happen to you, and then he's like, and they're like, well, what's left for the people? And then he's like, crumbs, and the crowd chants crumbs. That's all I can think of here.
Yeah, I hear that.
So George gets fired, and his daughter goes missing in very short order.
She runs away. She's like, F you, Dad, and she runs away. And also, Mom from Malcolm in the Middle was like, I trusted you, and, like, runs away from him.
Yeah, because it's, again, it's just She's All That with a town instead of a person.
Yeah, and then the whole town rallies behind, like, let's find this little girl, even Mom from Malcolm in the Middle, who just got pissed at him, and it's like, how do you all care about this little girl so much?
I'll be honest with you. This is the only time in the whole movie I felt like it was justified. Because this is a small town and a child is missing. Like, everybody would be all hands on deck. So all the other ones, I'm like, well, that's preposterous. But at this point, I'm like, no, that seems like about right for these people.
Okay, fair enough. And then he's like, wait a minute. What about that kid who's been hanging out with my daughter? That really old kid who has no business hanging out with my daughter.
It's very much a Johnny and Baby in Dirty Dancing situation where, like, if you think too hard about it, you're suddenly creeped out.
So he's like, I know where she's hiding. If she said she was going to a hideout, it's my secret spot.
Which, and like, everyone's like, oh, God, what has he killed there?
Yeah. The dad's like, we'll talk about the secret spot later. Come on. And they put on their coats and they go find her. And she, like, dove into the room as the door collapsed. I'm not really sure what her end game was here.
I can't figure it out either. And also, like, I can't stress enough how dangerous this would be, given that it's, like, 8 degrees and covered in snow. Like, it's just
-8 degrees.
It is not a place for human beings to be, let alone children.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like an emotional, you know, saving of the daughter, and then they have her like in bed eating hot soup and the dirty
she's
kid.
She's the little girl from the Secret Garden all of a sudden.
Yes, that's exactly it. And the dirty kid shows up while she's like, you know, drinking tea or eating soup or whatever. And she's like, if I lived here, we'd be best friends. And I'm like,
would you? Would you though?
I don't like the implication of that.
And then John Denver's downstairs being like, I wish there was a way for me to help them. And it's like, didn't you work there? Like, wasn't your job to do this? How can you not help?
Yeah, like, if anyone knows how to stop the machinations of this thing, it would be the guy who watched them do this last Christmas and could be like, here's what they're going to do. One right? by one, sell the businesses or whatever. Like, you'd think he would have some tips for strategy here. So now it's pageant time.
Children singing is the worst.
And these kids suck. Like, they're bad.
Children singing is the worst.
But there is good kid singing. Like, why didn't they dub in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or something? Or, like, the all-boys choir of somewhere, or, you know, all-girls choir of somewhere. Like, dub in good singing. These kids couldn't carry a tune with a dump truck.
Yeah, they're terrible.
And I don't mean to be shitty to kids, but, like, why is this in the movie? Like, I'm talking about filmmaking, not children's abilities. Like, this is bad directing choices.
I agree. And then John Denver stands up to tell everyone how to fix the problem as the boss comes in. Like, why is the boss there?
The pastor is like, normally I can't make an impassioned speech about the meaning of Christmas, but instead I'm going to let this interloper who sold us out have a big moment at the end of this movie for plot reasons.
Although, to be fair, even before that, a bunch of people were like, I know in your heart of hearts this wasn't what you intended.
Yeah, people come around way too fast on old
they
John
do.
Denver.
Also, what channel was this movie on? Do you know?
I think CBS.
Okay, I can
like a
that.
Real channel, yeah, like a basic over-the-air channel.
And then he says a bunch of words that I don't understand because I'm not an adult, and my only question is, like, how does a mortgage work?
He basically convinces them all that if they put their equity together, they can buy the property instead of the shitty business. So I guess the business sale, the transaction hasn't gone through, even though it seemed like it did earlier.
Yeah.
And they're basically going to just buy the place and prevent that guy from getting it. And so everybody in town's like, you can have my house and my restaurant and my store and my bank. We'll put all the mortgages together and do it and save the town.
So then the priest is like, again, normally we do this on Christmas Eve Mass, but instead we're going to go to the poor people's house and tell them that everything's going to be okay. All together as a group.
The other thing I like is, like, George's speech is essentially like, my wife has died. I got fired yesterday. My daughter was missing for a few hours there.
Almost died, straight up.
What I'm trying to say to y'all is, it hasn't been a great year for me. It would mean a lot if I could do something to help you guys. So yeah, they
sing another song.
They literally form a single file car line and drive all the way out to this place and get there. And Kurtwood Smith and his kids are packing up and they're like, hey, we bought your farm. You can stay now.
Let's sing about it, everybody. Come on.
I also love that he goes, Kurtwood Smith's like, well, I don't know what to say. Which, one, is a bad line in your movie, screenwriter. And two, the immediate response is everyone starts singing O Holy Night. Like, he barely gets the words out of his mouth.
It's Silent Night.
Oh, you're right.
Which I thought was kind of like a shady thing. He's like, I don't know what to say. And they're like, Silent Night.
Like they're being shitty to him. So smash cut to the next morning, and we didn't talk about this.
Oh, the present?
Yes. So these three guys in town had been, like, talking amongst each other.
I meant the other present.
Oh.
How his daughter was like, he's like, what did you want for Christmas? Because we had seen him buying a toy piano to go inside the dollhouse, like the last piece of this massive dollhouse. And he's like, so what do you want for Christmas? And he's like, knows the answer already. And she's like, well, I wanted a big dollhouse for the first time ever. And he's like, sweet. And she's like, but now I just wish my friend could keep his house. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Yeah, this kid is like a sadness factory. Like,
she's
like
Debbie Downer.
Yeah. Every other word out of his mouth is about her mom's dead. Here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How did they get that dollhouse to Georgetown, Colorado?
They shipped it.
Who did?
The receptionist.
Is there a plot point that explains it? Because I did miss that entirely.
Yeah, she says, I'll ship it first thing in the morning, Mr. Whatever.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, why would he have packed this enormous thing on a trip that was going to end before Christmas? Much better.
The receptionist sent it.
Okay, well, good
why
job.
Why he left it in the office, I don't know.
To hide it from the daughter.
Okay.
So, consistent logic in a movie we covered. That's a very rare thing for us.
They're about to shatter that real quick, so.
So earlier in the movie, the mayor and the other two, like, de facto mayor, like, you know, town people, had been talking about how to arrange to buy a motor for the car so that they could have, you know, this guy could have his Christmas wish granted, which was, hey, I need a new motor. Because everyone writes a letter to Santa in the town, not just the kids. And so these three older men meet up and they're like, hey, how'd you do for Christmas? And the one guy, you know, they all list their presents, including one guy says, I got a year's supply of bay rum, and holds up the bottle. And I was like, ooh, that sounds a little sad.
It does. But they also had been established, like, hey, we can't get a part. Like, we've gone as far as, like, Chicago and can't get the engine that we need. So, like, he's shit out of luck.
Yeah, like, we can't help him. His car's dead forever. And he rolls up in the car sounding like a brand new vehicle, and they all kind of look at each other and they're like, what? Did you? No.
It's like low-key Santa exists, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And then the follow-up is that he's dressed like the most flamboyant chauffeur of all time. He has, yes, like a sequined hat on and sequined gloves, basically. And some other woman in town is like, I bought him the motoring togs. But
oh,
yeah.
Oh, motoring togs, like the driving gear. Like,
yeah,
to,
yeah,
wear.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did you think I meant? The car, the engine?
Yeah, I was like,
oh, no. Like the clothes. And then the little girl and John Denver are there, and they're like, you know, I think we're going to stay in town a little while longer. Cue Jane pulling up in the sleigh and being like, you guys want another ride? I did promise you one. And the movie
like,
ends.
Okay.
They hop in and they go on a sleigh ride, and then Bud drives by in the car, like beeping and honking at them with like five people in it. Everybody waves and they drive past, and then boom, still frame back to a Christmas card.
Mm-hmm.
So the real horror of this movie is that these people are trapped in a Christmas card for the rest of their existence.
It's like the witches.
It is. It's exactly. So that's the Christmas gift. What are your final thoughts?
It's not really worth it. It's not aggressively bad, but it's not particularly worth it.
Yeah, I was, you know, it's one of those kind of weird in the between ones where it's like, I was really hoping this is going to be hilarious, and mostly it was just like, fine. Like, it wasn't good, but it was like wildly inconsistent in its character motivations, which is an annoying thing as a film viewer. But like, I've seen way worse Christmas movies than this, looking right at you, Elf. And yeah, it's bad, but it's not like aggressively bad.
I mean, at least Elf is consistent.
Like, I'm pretty sure the people of Georgetown, Colorado who hear this aren't going to ban us from town forever.
No.
Like, I would hope.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So, like, I'm not going to recommend it. Watch something else. But, like, it's fine.
Yeah. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it is. And it's also airing on the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries channel. So you got that going for you, which is nice.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of like if you're having a party and you want, like, a Christmas movie on that people aren't really paying attention to, but will provide background noise. Is that a demo?
I guess, but like also pick Muppet's Christmas Carol that everybody likes and can like turn their brain on for 5 seconds at a time to watch it while the good songs are playing.
Okay. Yeah, I hear that.
You know, tune in for, you know, there goes Mr. Humbug, then tune back out until the next song comes up. Like, you know.
We're Marley and Marley.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. I put it on last night and did exactly that. I like was typing something and then the song would come on and I would like, you know, hands under my chin, enjoy the song. And then I'd go back to typing and then a new song would come and I'd, you know, hands under the chin and then I'd go back to typing. It was very lovely.
Nice.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, since we're not going to see you until 2017. We love doing the show for you, and it would be the greatest, speaking of Christmas gifts, while we're on the topic, it would be the greatest gift of all if you could rate and review this show wherever you get it. We really appreciate that you're spending your time with us. There are many podcasts out there to choose from. We're super thrilled that you found and enjoy us. If you'd like to help us keep doing it and help spread the word, there are two things you can do. One, rate and review the show where you get it, iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. The other is the simplest and greatest thing of all, word of mouth. If you like the show, tell two friends. Share a post, share an episode you like, share a joke you like, something with the people that you love, and maybe they'll turn into fans of the show too. That's the pyramid scheme of podcasts is what we're aiming to create here.
Tweet out one of our jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we would be thrilled. Find us on, speaking of Twitter, find us on Twitter at Dissectamania, DISSECTAMANIA. Someone pointed out to me that people might not know how to spell that. Facebook.com/DissectingThe80s and Dissecting the 80s on Instagram. Also, dissectingthe80s.com for anything you would ever want to know about the show and all the old episodes. We're at the point now where the back catalog is, and it's not our fault, we're not hiding them or anything, but the way that the RSS feeds work for podcasts is you can't get our first episode in the feed anymore. So if you want to do that, it's on the website and it's always there for
you. Mean on like the iPod, iPhone,
most podcasters, yeah, podcast. At this point, I don't think any podcast apps you can grab before episode like 10 or 12 now, I think. So as we put more out, you can't get the early ones. It's just the way that you're only 50 in the feed.
Gotcha.
So thank you guys so much for listening. I'm kind of excited about our next episode. One, we recorded it like 6 months ago.
Oh, that's right. Thank God.
And we had to put it on the shelf. We had to put it on the shelf because they moved the movie for like the fifth time. But I think with this, we're officially closing.
I swear to Christ, if it gets moved.
I can't imagine.
We're just going to release it as is. And say, fuck it.
I can't imagine they're going to move the movie again a week before, 2 weeks before it comes out. But the latest Amityville Horror film comes out in like January 2nd or January 5th or early January. And we're releasing our episode on Amityville Horror Part 2, which I think, I'm not sure, but I think is the last eligible Amityville Horror film for this podcast.
Oh, no.
So we're gonna
we're so
be
sad to see
we're
it
gonna
go.
Be, you know, it's weird, but I kind of have a soft spot for it after all we've been through together.
Ugh, stupid house with the windows.
But like, I really like that lamp joke that we did a lot of versions of.
Oh, you mean I see? If we're going with favorite jokes we've made, mine is using the demon voice.
Barbara, right. Whatever, Carol, or whatever your name is.
Yeah, so I have if you want to, it's on our YouTube page. If you search Dissecting the 80s on YouTube, it should pop right up. I cut together about 7 minutes of Amityville Part 4 to our jokes about it, and I think it works pretty nicely. A good illustration of the craziness that is that movie. But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks for Amityville Horror Part 2. Until then,
don't you forget about me.
Dissecting the 80s is a Chum Some of This production.